Hello, I'm Andy Hines, and I'm the Associate Director of the Adelot Foundation at Swarthmore College. You are listening to Chair Chat, an audio commentary of the first episode of the Netflix series, The Chair. On this recording, you'll hear in this order, Karen Tongson, Professor and Chair of Gender and Sexuality Studies at USC, Jamie Taylor, Associate Professor and Chair of Literatures and English at Bryn Mawr College, and Eric Song, Associate Professor and Chair of English Literature at Swarthmore. I'll note that we had some technical difficulties in starting this recording. You'll want to navigate your Netflix player to 2 minutes and 15 seconds to synchronize your viewing with this audio. Once it is ready, press play now.
I know this is important character development stuff, but the minute that I saw Jay Duplass's face, I was just like, oh no, I'm not gonna like this. It's just like, this is going to be that guy, isn't it?
Yeah, the second you see him, you know exactly who he is immediately.
I don't know, I only know him as Joshy. That's all I ever call him.
This chairs meeting is also a really important setup about the sort of institution and the individuals that are tasked with fixing it, even though they have no real authority to do so.
Well, and that's a small English department, right? Or it's definitely not as large as the English department I'm in, right? So she's taking care of things like undergraduate enrollments and all the stuff, but that's a sort of director of undergrad studies thing, at least in a really big school like the one that I'm at. You know, that's sort of everybody plops their little update in.
Yeah. Eric, are you, because for my little liberal arts institution, this would be something.
The Harold Bloom thing, I love because everyone talks about it, but don't you think that was like the Harvard doctoral candidate who helped write this show, taking a piss on, taking a piss out of Yale, which happens again later in the show?
Right. The medievalist.
So that conversation is real, and we've had a version of that conversation come up via email, but also in person during meetings. It's, I've heard a rumor and here's the deal, and there's a kerfuffle. So I know that people think this is absurd or farcical, which it is, but that those elements to me strike a kind of realist note.
And I will say, and we can talk about this later, but the ageism that the show really relies on but doesn't quite address is something real in departments across the US. I mean, really across academia, it's not something that they do very well, I think.
I think what's interesting about like what's real and what's not is the formal choice to make her give like a rousing speech, or attempt to, at least, as if that happens in department meetings. That's the part that I found hilarious. Like, no one gives speeches at department meetings, I don't think. Maybe I'm doing it wrong, but.
not I, I'm not I, but I've seen a couple folks do that.
But I mean, it also kind of sets up the classroom scenes, right? Where at least the ones I've seen are so heavily lecture-based.
Right.
So there's a whole kind of thing about focus on the speaker a little bit. That's the kind of dramatic angle. So I thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, holy shit, it's David Morse. And I Wikipedia'd him.
Oh, he's
6 foot. He was in The Rock, remember?
Yeah, and The Negotiator.
Mm-hmm. See, that would be a required class.
Yeah. Or here where we don't really have requirements, we do have students who come in with kind of conservative like ideals, either from their parents or from high schools, and they would be in that class because they thought that would be the kind of thing that they would be.
That's where you pick up your cultural capital, right?
Our surveys have really just kind of withered. They're not big in our curriculum anymore.
So I teach a class called Romance to Bromance. And when I first started it, the much older faculty member who was a delight, but he was like, what is bromance? And I couldn't figure out a good way to explain it. So there was a bit of a gap there.
Yeah, this like is the pants. Detail. I know. First of all, the high-waisted pant.
Yeah,
nice good. Choice. The verisimilitude of that would be whether or not she bought it new or it's still the same pair of pants she's had since the 90s, which might be the case. But this is the scene that a lot of people were very angry about, at least on the Twitter sphere, is the idea of the quote-unquote violence of merging Yaz's class with Elliot Rentz's class. And, you know, first of all, like a lot of folks say that doesn't happen. What I've heard, not my experience at certain Ivies, assistant professors do co-teach or are merged or in effect turned into almost de facto TAs for certain courses. Is that do other folks, because I had a friend who's had an assistant job at, you know, Princeton and complained about that. They no longer work there, but that seems to me like a very particular Ivy complaint and a kind of detail that would come up in that scenario.
I've never experienced it myself, but I've heard that at the Ivies specifically, that there is a kind of apprenticeship. It's considered a sort of apprenticeship model, but it's really infantilizing. Mm. Oh, here he is. The Harry Potter blanket is a good detail, I will say.
There are a lot of good details in fleshing out this particular character. The micro-aggressivity is real. That feeling of micro-aggressivity is totally real. Mm. Even if the circumstance may happen or the exchange may happen differently, that's what I think, you know, I think folks have been so obsessed about like whether or not it reflects their experience. And I'm just like, look, crazy rich Asians, you know, like it doesn't represent all Asian experience either. And we complain about that, but you know, you got to just make more stuff. You have more plenitude, you know, have the plenitude of options for thinking about what represents you, you know, well or not. Anyway, Chaucer.
I really like this scene.
Poetry, not the father of modern English, to be persnickety.
I really like this scene because I have long held that no movie or TV ever gets what it's like being in a humanities classroom right at all. But I feel like that scene made me revise my theory and say, no movie or TV show really gets a good classroom experience, right? But the awkwardness of the teaching going poorly, I guess the show's pretty good at.
That's a good point. Oh, the Icelandic sweater. I mean, the wardrobe.
And also, though, people always complain about how, you know, aesthetically pleasing the classroom environments or her particular classroom environment is. But it seems like she's sort of, as the chair, has, you know, priority to schedule her class at the, in the cute room at the library, you know.
And I will say here, we do teach in cute little rooms. They're problematic in that the acoustics are bad, the HVAC is terrible and that kind of thing. But there is a way in which the kind of crumbling gray gardens aspect of this does reflect some spaces.
Mm-hmm. Usually not with a lectern though.
That, yes, fair enough. this scene.
I actually think he nails the kind of borderline sleaziness of it all, because it's just ambiguous enough.
Yep, I totally agree. This was
this is the best.
This is great. And what I loved about this scene was the way that it's easy to forget that your students have these lives. Their campus is their life, right? And so outside the classroom, they're doing all sorts of other things that you never witness. And then when you do, it's so disconcerting.
Oh my God, your gyms at USC must be magnificent.
Oh. I don't know. I never go there. I can't work out around students.
No.
But yeah, I do think the facilities are good.
Remember going to the gym as a grad student was always that middle space where you could go. At least it was for me at UVA. Yeah.
See, this office is pretty realistic though.
Yeah, this is real.
This actually made me crazy. And I think we can talk about it more later, but the idea that she hasn't read her evals as a way of ignoring students is clearly to ignore the act of sort of resistance of not reading your emails, knowing that they are often sexist and racist. Mm-hmm. Sort of a female professor in this department would have had a sort of been one of the early feminists. Like, I feel like not reading her student evaluations is a choice she deliberately made, and it's getting sort of bowled over here as, you know, her being like out of touch or that kind of thing.
Only one graduate student in this whole series, or at least one identified graduate student in this whole series.
Where's my dongle? The dongle's in your hand. Mm-hmm. Maybe the greatest line of this episode. Hmm.
But isn't the show, the one grad student is also this weird side effect or maybe byproduct of the mishmash of fantasies that you have at this school that's neither big nor small, or like what size is it? It's right. Not liberal arts, it's not a university.
Right.
It's rich but shabby.
Right.
It's a quote unquote lesser Ivy is how it's identified later on.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay.
A lot of chatter has been really grumpy about this, too.
This is very unrealistic. Being a chair is nothing like this.
Yeah, there's definitely no keep away.
No velvet couch.
Mm. IKEA love seat, but nothing like this ever happens.
The ongoing concern for this character, that everybody has to kind of be very concerned for him and worried about him and supportive of him and that kind of thing, is to me very, very true. Mm. I mean, it may be exaggerated. I think it is exaggerated, and I think it is making people sort of grouchy, but the need to care for and sort of cloak in understanding and compassion, the sort of messy male professor, rings true to me.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that absolutely rings true to me as well. And it escaped me the detail that he has the keys because he was the chair previously. Like, you know, that sort of like the one part where she's like, you're not the chair anymore. That's the one part that we get that he actually, this hot mess, used to be in charge of the department, and no one seemed to really care about that before. And now she's like, now that she's undertaken it, there's tremendous and extra pressure on her to do this.
Do they clarify the time scale of like, when did his wife die? Because what stands in for his wife dying is him seeing his daughter off to college.
Right.
Yeah. I believe it was, someone says at some point, like it's been a year. Over a year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we get the sense that it's been, you know, some time already. It wasn't
okay.
Like within a month.
I have to say, I'm intrigued by the show's commitment to like somehow asking like how interchangeable or not is Koreanness and Mexicanness or something like that, which I find fascinating as like a premise.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I haven't thought enough about it, but I'm interested in sort of her aged father and then the aged men in her department and her relationship and ongoing negotiations among those people.
I don't know what happens in the rest of the show exactly, but don't these domestic scenes like kind of emphasize the point of how Korean she is at home and how not Korean she is at work?
There's some chatter, and especially in the last couple of episodes, where we see scenes in a kind of a more immersive Korean environment.
Yeah, I saw the clips where Joshi goes to the 100-day party. I don't even know why he was there, though. I have to ask Sarah, why was he even there?
Yeah, it was a babysitting thing, or okay. Like he somehow gets into it's complicated how they get him there, but yeah, there's a lot of chatter about her improper Koreanness or improper Korean femininity that appears as the series moves forward.
Oh, because she's not with Daniel Dae Kim.
Daniel Dae Kim, she's not. Her dad says some stuff too about, you know. You know, why are you hanging out so much with this shabby, dilapidated man or something like that? There's some phrase that he uses to describe the J. Duplass character, the Bill Dobson character.
Well, that's funny then. The dad is like everyone else.
The Gen X soundtrack to the show is, you know.
I'm really into this song. What, do you know what this is? It sounds so much like New Order, but it's like not really New Order.
Yeah. Gosh, what is it? I have to...
Someone on Twitter said it might be Destroyer, but I don't know if they meant it as a hypothesis or they were telling me.
We could Shazam it.
Yeah.
So here again, we have these two Asian women, right, talking about like trying to find this shabby, dilapidated Joshi, right? And like haul him into class, where then of course he runs into the big problem, but like haul into class that he's gonna just push his way through on sheer charisma, which he fully expects will happen, right? But behind the scenes, like she has to help him tie his shoes and all of that kind of stuff.
That was Debo?
So much competing cable knit in this scene.
I find this whole scene so weird. Like, what was it trying to do? I think I know what it was trying to do, but it was like playing into all these weird, I don't know.
I think the purpose of the scene is to establish that her attention, Sandra Oh's attention, Jian's attention's pulled from lots of the other things she has to do because she's absorbed with Will, but also it sets up the kind of Title IX, the thorniness of Title IX, especially when you have this kind of wide generational gap between the people administering it and the people who are misguided about what it's supposed to do.
But yeah.
Friend, yeah.
I just thought it was such a weird kind of staging of like an antagonism between like a older feminism and this Title IX officer. I thought the whole premise was, her getting it wrong, the gender of the chair, all this kind of stuff seemed, it all made it seem like, a kind of curious scene that it's doing a lot of work, even though it's kind of a little bit gratuitous as a scene.
Yeah. My friend Jennifer Doyle, who writes a lot about Title IX and in campus contexts, she really liked these scenes. Oh. These scenes resonated with her. And I think because she said also that most often the people who do handle Title IX at university settings aren't necessarily trained or equipped for that. Mm. Now, having to put that in the body of a young Hoppe woman is a bit of a choice. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
But it also seems like part of this scene is suggesting that while he was chair, he either didn't care about enrollments or wasn't asked to care about enrollments, right? Mm-hmm. And that is all of a sudden something that she has to really focus on. Or he did care, he was asked to care and didn't do enough.
And I know that everybody hates the enrollments conversation, the butts and seats conversation.
But
I mean, I've had to have it, we've had it.
Okay, this makes me crazy.
Yeah.
The like ha-cha-cha, booze and getting high or whatever.
The thing that drives me crazy is that the undergraduates would care to start shooting right. video of the class in yeah. these ways. I guess it does happen, but like that many people simultaneously, like, is a bit of a caricature of youth. Yeah.
I'm curious what you guys think of the kind of premise of the show, that the students at this school seem pretty disaffected when it comes to, like, you know, the literature being taught. But then they're kind of gung-ho about putting stuff on the internet and stuff. I mean, I'm like of two minds. I think it's like a ridiculous premise. But on the other hand, like, you know, what they're teaching, the curriculum is outdated and that's part of the show. So is that what it's trying to capture? I'm of two minds of like, the fantasy of disaffected students.
Yeah.
It's a great question. I mean, the way in which technology like is a stand-in, right? Hmm. For also a shorthand for, you know, sort of youth and superficiality and that kind of thing in contrast to aged, you know, sort of slow figureheads is troubling. Especially when digital humanities is such a huge part of the conversation for humanists all over the place and for administrators.
Thank you for listening. This has been Chair Chat, a production of the Adelot Foundation at Swarthmore College. You can read more about the chair, higher education, and the liberal arts at our webpage, adelot.swarthmore.edu.